Oliver Callan on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Get Set Go. Get comprehensive car insurance today at getsetgo.ie.
And 0870 32 32 32 is the WhatsApp. The unstoppable Don Baker has had a very busy year. He brought his one-man show, My Story, around the country for the first half of 2025. He's now recording a new album, we're hearing. He's going to give his time to perform at Tighlin's Homeless Cafe. That's the Lighthouse on Pier Street in Dublin this evening. It's part of a very special festive event. He's going to tell us all about it. Don Baker, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Oliver. Thanks for having us.
Not so bad. Is 2025 has been treating you well?
Yeah, so far so good.
As good as you can expect, I suppose. You're making music at the minute.
Yeah, I'm making music all my life.
Don't stop.
Non-stop. But I've gone in today to do a concert for the homeless.
Yeah.
And I got involved with the Lighthouse. That's the place where they feed the homeless all year round. And they do a fantastic job. And I got a call a couple of years ago to go in and do a gig for them. And so I do three or four a year, I'd say.
Oh, do you? Yeah.
Yeah, and I love going in. It's great meeting the people. It's where I come from, the inner city, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, having said that, I mean, all nationalities go to get fed there.
It is. It has changed over the years, hasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, but it's great to be, you know, it's not often you get the opportunity to be in on the ground, talking to people, shaking hands with people, and getting to know them firsthand, you know. It's really funny, you know. I was singing for them one time. A song I wrote called I Blame Crack Cocaine, you know?
Yeah.
And I was singing that, and one woman came up to me and said, I don't blame effing cocaine, I blame myself, you know. So it's just funny moments.
That is the attitude, though, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. So, but it's great. And I don't know, for some reason, I love doing it. Like, I mean, I was born in 1950.
Go ahead.
And, we were very poor, Simon. And, if it wasn't for the St. Vincent de Paul, I don't know what we would have done, like, giving us food vouchers and stuff. And you don't forget. And then later on in life, I was a member of the Belvedere Newspaper Boys Club in Malibu Street.
Oh, yeah?
And they were tremendous help as well. Like,
How many were in the family when you were growing up?
There was four of us. Myself, my brother Pat, and two sisters.
Are they all still around?
They're all, thank God, yeah, and they're all doing very well, thank God.
As a family, did you ever end up homeless?
Well, I was in hospital. I'm probably lucky. It's a mad thing to say, but look. The family lost a home, and the corporation eventually gave them a room in the inner city, because we lived in Whitehall.
Yeah.
And, I don't know all the details, but I remember someone telling me my two sisters went into a home, the Sacred Heart Home in Drumcondra. And that left just my brother with my mother, and I think he slept in a park for a few nights.
Really?
Yeah. Now, this is 70 years ago.
Yeah. You've no memory of that, I presume?
Well, I have a bit of a memory. I remember hearing about it. Like, I'd have been about 7 years of age at the time.
Right.
And but I was snug as a bug in the rug, so I'd been in hospital. So I couldn't have missed that episode, but I heard about it. And then when I came out of hospital to live in the inner city, that was a bit of a shock, you know.
Yeah.
And I wrote a song about it, actually. It was number one. It was called The Inner City Song.
The Inner City, yeah. Number one in 1979.
That's right. Now you have it. Yeah. I didn't even know the year. I would have forgotten that.
There's loads of covers of the song on YouTube. You know,
that's right. Loads, yeah. I'll tell you what happened. I was in a band called The Business at the time, and it was a blues band. And it'd be sacrilege, like, to sing with traditional music if you're a blues musician.
Okay.
You know, so he said, did you write that? He said, it wasn't me.
Is that right?
Yeah, I had to deny it.
Down.
Yeah. With the result, everyone claimed he wrote it, you know.
And it is done in a very trad way.
It is done in a trad way. Yeah. The Jolly Beggarman had a hit with it.
Jolly Beggarman.
I mean, I wrote it first. Myself and my pal Johnny Norris performed it. And on the Mulligan record label, it didn't do a whole lot, being quite honest. But they got the track and they added an oboe and made it a bit more commercial sound.
Yeah.
And they got a hit, they got a number one with it. So.
Did you not have a harmonica on the original?
I didn't put the harmonica. Is it
mad?
Like,
that's mad.
The harmonica, me and the harmonica, it comes so bloody easy, that. You know, it's hard to explain. Like, I never, ever played at home or... I only play when I go on stage. I spend my whole life.
Really?
Yeah, I spend my whole life. I mean, I've done 15 years on the piano, doing the classical thing, all the grades, you know.
Yeah.
And what happened was I went in to record an album. The album's called My Songs, My Friends. Where I had God Rest Her, Sinead O'Connor on, and Finbar Fury was on, and Liam O'Mahony, and 14 of the top celebrities in the country. But when I had the album finished, I went back to my piano. I couldn't play a note. And it was because I was reading music. And I'm not saying it was a waste of time. I was a bit disappointed. Someone explained to me something about the left side of the brain, the right side of the brain.
Go away, yeah.
You know, and I couldn't. I think when you're reading music, it says you don't have to memorise this. It's kind of weird. Hard to explain, actually.
And the harmonica, when you pick it up, you're in hospital, aren't you?
That's right, yeah.
As a kid.
I was three times in hospital as a kid.
Recovering from TB?
TB, yeah.
Each time?
Each time, yeah.
Quite.
Yeah, so, there was a guy who had a TB in the back area of the spine, and all he could really do was lie on his back, read a book.
Wow.
He couldn't sit up, you see, and play a harmonica. So I forced her to him play the harmonica. And but listen, we need to talk about these homeless people.
You want to talk about it? And you, the first time I believe you played in the Lighthouse Cafe, Tiglin, you were nervous.
Yeah, they were all eating, so I felt I'd be interrupting their meal. And then Alan came up to me, the guy that runs the place, and he
said, Alan Bobinach.
Yeah, he's a lovely guy. And he said, Don, you need to sing up, like, you know. I said, are you sure? And he said, yeah, yeah. So then I let it rip, you know. So every time I go in now, I let it rip, you know.
And that worked, didn't it?
It does work, yeah, it was great. And, you know, it's, I remember one time I was going to give, there was some girls talking to me, and I was, you know, you'd feel sorry for people, you know. I was going to give her 50 euros. And Anna said, don't, this particular girl had a drug problem, you know. She says, don't give her. He says, she'll spend it on drugs. Don't give her the money. So it's hard to know if you're doing right or wrong, you know.
Well, you're there to kind of create the atmosphere.
Just create the atmosphere.
Which is one of hope, isn't it?
Yeah.
They're together. There's people thinking of them.
Yeah, but today is a special day because it's in St. Andrews there. And I think it's down on Pier Street somewhere.
Yeah.
And so there's a three-course meal on for the homeless, and I believe Santa Claus is coming as well. So giving out presents and all that.
Yeah, but that's it's vital for these people. They're often wandering the streets. They're
Do you know what was really hard? I felt really heartbreaking. Last Christmas last year, I went into the Lighthouse, and I'd done a gig, and I brought a couple of boxes of CDs with me, and I was giving them out free.
Yeah.
And the people were coming up asking me to sign the CDs. Will you sign it to Mary? Will you sign it to my mother? Yeah, and they were going to use them for Christmas presents.
Right.
Jesus, it broke my heart. I said, fuck it all, you know.
That's all they had?
Yeah, yeah. And it was just, an age brought tears to my eyes, you know.
Do you feel good afterwards, though, that
Like I explained to you, Oliver, you know, when I was a kid, I got help, you know. And I mentioned the club on Mulvey Street, the newsboys club.
The Belvedere newspaper boys.
Jerry Walsh is the head of that organisation. And I remember Vincent Butler. And then a guy who became a great friend of mine, Michael Collins. And Michael Collins helped me throughout my life. I subsequently got to know his brother Sean, and then his brother Morris, who actually took my tonsils out. So the point I'm making is, without people like that, you don't think of it at the time when you're young like that. But it was a huge influence on my life, you know. Mm-hmm,
absolutely.
And it helped. So, like, you mightn't think we're doing all that much good when we do things, but we actually are.
You're giving your time.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And you're sending the message to them that there are people thinking of you.
Yeah, I mean, look, the way I look at it is, like, there's no difference between me and a guy serving life in Mountjoy. The only difference is in what we do, not essentially who we are. So when I look at people, I see that. You know, they're just falling on hard times, you know.
Have you seen a change in the atmosphere in Tiglin and the Lighthouse and visiting these people over the years that you've been doing it?
Yeah, I mean, they have smiles on their faces, you know, and they're quite, well, I mean, they're getting fed. Mm-hmm. So they're quite happy, you know, and it's fantastic. Like, when I was a kid, we went to a place in Henrietta Street, which is where my mother was born.
The famous Tenement Street, and yeah, there's a museum to Tenements.
And
there,
there was the nuns there used to feed us, and penny dinners we call it. You could only get your dinner for a penny. And I remember he used to give us this real thick black cake. We call it gore cake.
Gore cake.
Now, gore was when you meet from school and run away from home, which I used to do all the time.
Yeah.
So the gore cake. I must write a song about that.
Yeah, cake. I'm amazed you haven't.
But, you know, the penny dinners, you know. And so, yeah.
Kept you alive.
So my background, like, I mean, I don't know why. I can't really put my finger on it. I made a success in my life. You know, I'd be famous all over the world. I've recorded 20 albums. I've been in movies, all that kind of stuff.
Recovery, isn't it?
Yeah, but the thing about it is, real success is when you change on the inside. All that stuff doesn't really mean anything. You know, like, I mean, I think, like, the root of all the problems with people, now, this is after 20 years of therapy, okay, is a thing called toxic shame. When we've been shamed, we've no confidence, you know, we don't feel good enough, we don't feel we deserve, we don't feel like we belong, you know, we feel different, feel like an outcast, you know, we had a saying when I was growing up, you'll never be anything.
Yeah.
He'd give you a clip in the back of the ear, you'll never be anything. And these are the messages you got. But with the toxic shame, it's very hard to get, so we talk about peeling the onion, I get down to the centre of the onion. Well, I know for a fact, the centre of the onion is toxic shame. You know, and when you're toxically shamed, you keep it a secret even from yourself and you act all your life. You try to act confident, but you never are. So, you know, that's a tough call.
Did you get rid of it?
Well, you don't get rid of it, you learn how to deal with it, which is way more valuable. When I started therapy all them years ago, I thought I'd get rid of my anger. I thought I'd get rid of my anxiety, all my fear, all of my jealousies, all of my judgment, all this stuff. I never got rid of anything, but more importantly, I learned how to deal with it, which is much more valuable, you know, and how to grow with it and how to not act out of it, you know, because you either work it out or you act it out, you know, and that's the way it is, you know. So, you know, the book stops here. And, yeah, so, you know.
You've told us you're born in 1950. So you're 75 this year.
75, yeah.
Is life good? Are you dealing with it? Is it?
Life is great. Myself and my wife, we own a hotel in Trim.
Yeah.
It's called Brogan's Hotel. Now, it's really my wife. I mean, I can barely count to 10. My wife
is no good at the till.
My wife, Maureen, is the boss, and she's the brains. And, you know, it's funny for women. I'm beginning to discover when I say it's my wife's hotel, it's not mine. You know, it's all we're doing. Behind every great man is a great woman. People can't accept that a woman can be successful and a woman can, you know, do what my wife did, you know, and own the hotel and whatever else she owns. And
so what do you do then?
I'll get down and sing a couple of songs now and again, which is all I can do, you know.
It's
really
very good, yeah.
And support her morally, but that's where it stops. So, like, Maureen, it's all Maureen, you know, but it's amazing, even women.
Hotel.
Yeah, but it's still Maureen. Think it's, yeah. And it is, in a way. I mean, I'm married to Maureen.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I don't know.
But you're telling us you're the plus one here.
Exactly. Okay. You know what I mean?
I noticed, was it November you posted on Facebook? It was the anniversary of that interview you gave on The Late Late in 1990, where you kind of went public with your recovery story. What were you thinking about when you were reminiscing 35 years?
It was funny that just actually came out on that show, talking to Gabe Warren. That wasn't planned or anything.
Wasn't it?
No, somebody asked some question and I started on about being abused by the Catholic Church in a place called Dangan, where I was incarcerated for 2 years, you know.
In Offaly.
In Offaly, yeah. And I think I shed a tear on that show, which I felt a bit ashamed of. I wouldn't feel ashamed about shedding a tear now.
No.
But back then I did. And I think I was one of the first ones to start to come out and talk. And again, we're back to the toxic shame.
Yes.
The shame will stop you dead from talking about stuff. So the more I talk about this stuff, the more, and that's the way I do it, by the way. I mean, it's for myself. Because when I do it and I talk openly about it, it breaks the shame down.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, and I encourage people, you know, to be honest about their emotions and honest about their feelings, you know. So I deal with people all the time. I try to help people. And the hard thing to get mentally was to shed a tear. You know, we're just, I say...
It's improving though, isn't it?
Yeah, like big boys don't cry. We just have nervous breakdowns, heart attacks and strokes, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I talk about the John Wayne syndrome. Like John Wayne's in the ditch shooting Indians and Wacky gets an arrow in the chest and he breaks it off and takes the thing from around his neck and try and stop the blood. And the girl's loading the rifle beside him. He says, yeah, okay, it's just a scratch. It's just a scratch. Keep loading the rifle, I'll keep shooting Indians.
It feels like something from another century, but that kind of John Wayne masculinity is back in, it's back in vogue, unfortunately.
Yeah, I know that, yeah, the Rambos and all that. But like in reality, like, you know, like, I mean, I wouldn't like to cry in public and be quite honest about it. You would be embarrassed. But like in private, I think it's important that we learn to, there's five natural emotions, you know. You know what they are, like there's anger, the love and fear, obviously. Anger, grief and envy, they're the five natural emotions. I was born in 1950. I wasn't allowed to feel any of them. Mm. You know, especially like, you're not afraid of them. Me afraid? No, I'm not. And you'd be terrified. You're not angry though, right? Oh, me angry? I'm not angry, you know. And so, you know, all the emotions are bottled. And then I get to 30 and I start having panic attacks, anxiety attacks. Yeah. And I wonder why.
Mm. You know, bottled up.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean?
It's going to have to come out in some way, isn't it?
It's going to have to come out in some way.
Usually it's anger.
Yeah, well, if you start having panic attacks, that's a real sign you need to get into therapy.
You can handle all the emotions now, Don.
Well, I allow for them. You know, if I feel sad, I'll shed a tear. If I feel happy, I'll laugh. If I feel angry, like, anger is such a wonderful emotion when it's white. If it, you know, anger will help you set a boundary and help you protect yourself, you know, when it's expressed in a healthy way. Yeah. You can express anger with a smile on your face. But the way I used to express it was like hitting people and throwing chairs and, you know, all that kind of stuff. That's when it turns red. Well, if you express anger when it's white, it's a great emotion. Like, I think that the anger we talk about is really rage.
That's rage, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. If anger is not expressed constantly, it will turn into rage. And, you know, and you'll have an outrage.
You just get it out of the system.
That's right. Well, you think you're getting out of your system, but you're not. You're making it worse.
I want to read some of the messages coming in for you, Don. Lovely to hear Don Baker on the radio. Me and my first band used to play support gigs with Don in the Earl Grattan in Capel Street many moons ago. Happy days, says Brian and Bal Doyle. Ex-A Minor. Is A Minor?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
To say I love Don Baker would be an understatement, thinks what they meant to say. Understanding is what they do. Good to hear you going strong. You never went away, though.
No, never went away.
I was in Brogan's a few times, says Dominic. The food and service is excellent. So they know now to credit Maureen.
Oh, the steaks are brilliant.
Do you come across people who got your book on the harmonica, which had lessons?
All the time.
To play it, yeah.
All the time. People tell me, you know, we learned from your, you learned from your book. And a lot of people, being honest, said we got the book, couldn't make head nor tail of it. And that was that. But so some people have learned from the book. I wrote 8 books in the harmonica.
Did you really?
Yeah, and it's funny that they're in all different languages. German, Spanish, Italian.
Because it played everywhere.
There's even in Japanese, you know.
I was wondering, are you still in touch with Daniel Day-Lewis, who got you into acting and got you into The Name of the Father?
Well, you see, Daniel didn't really get me into acting. What happened was, like, him and Jim Sheridan used to come to my gigs back in the day.
Yeah.
And I always felt they were looking at me through the lens of a camera, being honest. And he kept saying to me, you need to do a screen test. And I've no aspirations to be an actor or actor. And I don't grasp myself as an actor even today. But so they'd be saying you do a screen test. And then one day I got a call to go over to Kilmainham Jail to do an audition for some film called The Name of the Father. And I heard it was about a prison. And I'm thinking on the way over in the car, they're going to shave my head and I'll be playing a harmonica in a prison cell.
Yeah.
Not realising they had this role in mind for me.
Very serious role.
Yeah, and that's how that came about, you know. But it was really through my manager, Barry Gaster, because Barry done the accounts for Jim Sheridan. And he was going to, like, Barry Gaster was like his right-hand man at the time. So, and he also happened to manage me. So in all fairness, I think they were all come about because of my manager, Barry Gaster.
Are you still doing a bit of acting?
I don't like it.
Do you not?
No, I don't like it. It's the last film I did was with Dan Aykroyd and Robbie Coltrane. We were rubbing the Dublin Mountains and the walkie-talkies wouldn't work and the mobile phones wouldn't work, signal. So we were up there for 3 days and you'd be up at 5:30 in makeup by 6:15.
Yeah.
Made up by 6:45. They drove you up onto the mountain and I sat there for 3 days in the car and you couldn't even go for a walk.
That was you, John.
A Last Rain, I thought.
On the Nose, it was called, 2001. Is that it?
Okay, yeah, that yeah. That's right.
I take it you didn't watch it then, given the...
No. But I couldn't swear that that's it. And then COVID came along and I was offered Fair City.
Yeah.
And there was nothing happening. No gigs, no nothing.
And you were not a man to sit still.
I was going to do it, and my wife Maureen said, "You should do it, Louise. You're doing nothing else."
She's a good boss, isn't she, Maureen?
Yeah, she's brilliant.
Yeah. Listen, thanks a million for coming in for the chat.
My pleasure.
And I want to remind people again, if they want to drop off any donations, anything from warm clothing, toiletries, hats, scarves, the lot, Lighthouse Cafe Tiglin on Pier Street up until 4 p.m. today. But happy Christmas to you, Don Baker,
happy
and enjoy
Christmas
the gig at St. Andrew's Resource Centre.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Thanks a million.